So many of you know that over the course of this past summer, I had the opportunity, my family and I, to go on a sabbatical. And it was an incredible opportunity. And one of the things that we got a chance to do while we were on sabbatical was go to Alaska. Alaska is an incredible, I would almost say country, because it's literally the size of a country. It's bigger than actually some countries. But it's an incredible state. And one of the things that they tell you very quickly when you arrive in Alaska is how to handle the wildlife. Because handling the wildlife, well, really they don't want you to handle the wildlife, but what I mean is how do you navigate in a world where we are encroaching on their territory? They're not encroaching on ours, we're encroaching on theirs. And so they tell you very quickly, like, there's some rules. There are some animals that you run from, and there are other animals that you don't. So you have to learn this really quick. So if you ever come into, like, into contact with bears or wolves, you're to stand your ground, right? I know, it kind of sounds a little nutty, doesn't it? You know, you have a bear coming at you, you make yourself big, and a lot of people use the command, stay bear. And they'll literally just forcefully say, stay bear, and this, 1,100-pound animal will just all of a sudden stop, right? But it's true. They say make yourself big, and make yourself present. Even before you get into the woods, you should be calling out, hey, bears, because here's the interesting thing about bears. They can smell you from a mile away. Now, that's not preacher exaggeration. No. This is like fact. A bear can literally, if you are downwind of a bear, they can smell you, I guess upwind. Anyway, they can smell you from a mile away. So they will smell you before they see you. And they want you to announce yourself when you're going into those areas. And the difference actually is kind of funny because if you come into a contact with a black bear, you are supposed to make yourself big and say, stay bear, stay bear. But if it's a grizzly bear, you're supposed to fall, curl up in a ball, put your hands behind your neck so it doesn't eat your face off or your neck, and then keep your backpack on so it doesn't scratch through your back. And you basically just play dead because grizzly bears, they like a little bit of action with their eating. So if you play dead, then you actually might survive a grizzly attack. I know, the things you never thought you would hear on a Sunday morning, right? But then there's one final Alaskan animal that if you talk to anybody who lives in Alaska, they would tell you very quickly, if you ever come in contact with this animal, the only thing you do is run. And that would be the moose. If you were to come in contact, now I actually took this picture. It is not a real moose, because if you were ever this close to a real moose, it would not end pretty for you. But we had no idea. You would think, oh, maybe they're like, horses. Like, maybe they're like the size of a horse. Listen, until you have actually seen a moose in real life, you have no appreciation for the size of a moose. Actually, in Alaska, they nicknamed them swamp donkeys. Because they love swampy areas. And you don't go anywhere in the woods without making sure that you're able to protect yourself from bears and moose and everything else. But if you ever come in contact with a moose, you run. Because instinctively, what they are looking at you is that you are in their territory. They have no boundaries as far as what is their territory and what is your territory. In a moose's mind, it's all their territory. So if you're in contact with them, they will come and they will charge at you and you turn and you run until they have believed that you have left their territory. Now with an animal like a moose that doesn't believe that there is no such thing as a boundary of territory, guess what? You're going to be running a while. So now I say all this because that makes sense to me. It makes sense to me that in when something is attacking you, your instinct is to run. That totally makes sense. The whole bear situation doesn't make sense to me. But even while we were there, and this is a really sad story, but while we were there, a 16-year-old boy who was running in a Sparta race or a Tough Mudder, these are like endurance races, got off track and unfortunately he lost his life because he kept running from a bear. It was a black bear and it was in Anchorage, Alaska during an organized race. And he got off track and actually was texting his family on being chased by a bear. And they kept saying, stop, stand your ground. And unfortunately, he kept running. And because he kept running, it ended up costing him his life. So these are real things that happen. And in our instinct, it's always to run. When the enemy is coming towards us, when we're being attacked, the instinct is always run. But what about the times when we're supposed to stand our ground? What about the times we're supposed to make ourselves bigger and say, stay? So we're going to talk about that this morning. I want you to turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 14. We're in Exodus 14 today, and we're continuing a series called The Land Between, and we're almost to the in-between land. I know the series is entitled Land Between, but this last month, we haven't got to the between part yet. This is all preparation. But don't worry, we're getting there. So last week, the title of the message was The Roundabout Way. We looked at the fact that God led the Israelites in a roundabout way out of Egypt. It wasn't the straight path that they would have expected to go. Instead, it was in a roundabout way, but he did it because it was in their best interest. And because he knew them and he knew how they would respond if they came across the enemy. So he said, listen, I'm going to take them a different way. Just follow me. It's all good. And they're like, okay, you know, so they kept walking. Now, we also talked about the fact that God in that moment was building their faith muscle, right? So, well, let me just tell you this. If that story last week of them following God in a roundabout way was building their faith muscle, then what he's about to do is he's taking them to the gym. He is literally going to take them to the gym, because what we're about to read is a really big deal. So in the scripture, we're going to start reading right up here in Exodus 14, and we're in verse 1. It says, then the Lord gave these instructions to Moses, order the Israelites to turn back. What? 2 million people, right? Order the Israelites to turn back. And the Israelites were like, okay, you know, and they turned back. And then all of a sudden he says, encamp by Phihahiroth and between Migdol and the sea. Camp there along the shore. Folks, this is a terrible idea. Like, I can't get over when I'm reading this how bad of an idea this is. This is a terrible idea. We're going to get into that. And he says, across from Baal Zephon, then Pharaoh will think the Israelites are confused. They're trapped in the wilderness. Now, of course, Pharaoh would think that. And why would he think that? Because they were trapped. Literally, they were trapped between a sea and the desert. It was either don't drink water for a long time or swim in it. That was their two options. Now, here's the thing. When we read this scripture right here in verses 1-3, we have to take the perspective of what does it look like to the outside observer? What does it look like God is doing? Well, to the outside observer, it looks like they're confused. But to the person who's actually there, if you're the Israelites and God says, turn back, what do? You turn back. If God says, camp by the sea, then what do? Camp by the sea. Because why? God said so, right? So when God says so now here's the thing that we have to remember. Think about how true this is for you and me. Because there's times in your life and there's times in your story when God says, do this. And what do the outside observers, what do they look like? They go, what are you, crazy? Why would you want to do that? And then your response is, oh, God said so. Right? Folks, that's enough. That's enough. If you believe in your heart of hearts that God is leading you to do something, it might look crazy to the people around you. But if God says to do it, then what do? You do it. So that's the thing. Sometimes God's plans look confusing to other people. Am I not right? And here's the other reality. Don't you know that when you start walking with God, he's going to ask you to do things, even live a certain way that looks confusing to the rest of the world? You know this, right? It's going to look confusing to the outside world because he says, I don't want you to look like everybody else. I want you to look like my child. I want you to look like my disciple. I want you to look like a person who is doing what I ask you to do, even if it means in the face of danger you turn around and you actually put yourself in even more compromising positions, not because you place yourself there, but because you're following after God. Think about the missionary martyrs. Do you think if they knew that they were going to be martyred on the mission field that they'd be like, okay, right? Think about that. But God sent them into places because he sent them. And they said, I'm going to go to this cannibal nation, right? And then all of a sudden, people around them go, what, are you crazy? Why would you ever want to do that? Because God told me to. Because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't look normal to everybody else. This is a great story. Man, I could preach another 20 minutes just on these three verses. But I won't. I got to keep going. So Exodus 14:4, look at verse 4. Once again, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will chase after you. I have planned this in order to display my glory through Pharaoh and his whole army. After this, the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites camped there as they were told. Now remember, the communication is between the Lord and Moses. So Moses knows that Pharaoh's on his way. The people don't necessarily know that quite yet. They're still listening to Pharaoh or to Moses, and they're still listening to God. So Israel becomes a one massive object lesson for God. Now, as we continue to see the story, we're going to continue to see God's object lesson play out. But Israel becomes an incredible object lesson. But if you're a military strategist, okay, if you're a military strategist, you are looking at this plan and you're going, what, are they nuts? You have 2 million people and an army is coming to attack you, and you're going to back yourself up against a body of water that you can't cross? And you're going to put yourself right next to a desert that you can't live through? This is a terrible idea. Now listen, the reason Israel camped as they were told is because there was no enemy coming. They had no enemy. What's the big deal? If God says to camp by the shore, I'll camp by the shore. There's no reason not to, right? Now, again, if you think about it though, it's a terrible plan. Turn back. Camp along the shore. These are literally a list of things not to do when under attack. And so for us, we have to realize that they're like, it's all good. I'll go where God leads me because there's no enemy attacking, because up to this point, the enemy hasn't attacked. But haven't we been there? Haven't you been there? Haven't I been there? It's easy to have faith when things are going well, but the true measure of faith comes when the enemy attacks. It's easy to have faith and listen to God when he says, camp by the shore, and you're like, okay, yeah, there's no enemy here, so I'll certainly do that. But what if the story is all of a sudden you're here and God says, hey, I want you to camp by the shore, and you're like, wait a minute, there's an army, right, coming at us? This is probably not a good idea, and you start to debate with God, don't you? But do you see the difference? The difference is the fact that right now for the Israelites, they have no enemy. It's easy. That's about to change, isn't it? So let's look at Israel's response. Verse 10, as Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and they held a picnic. And they were like, listen, Pharaoh, you all come, bring your chariots, it's all good. We've got food for your horses, we've got water, we've got a picnic blanket spread out for you, right? Because that's the way the story's supposed to go, isn't it? No, we look at verse 10, what does it say? They looked up. And what did they do? Ah! They panicked. They panicked because now the struggle's real. And they saw the Egyptians overtaking them. And so what did they do? What was their response? Read it with me. They cried out to the Lord. Now let me tell you, this is a really good spot to stop and just realize something. Whenever the enemy is attacking, the number one thing that you should do, and the lesson we can learn, just a little small lesson from Israel, is cry out to God. That's the number one thing that you need to do, is you need to cry out to God. We can look at that and say that they did the right thing. We need to cry out. Psalm 46:1, in fact, I referenced it earlier in my prayer. God is our refuge and strength, our ever-present help in time of trouble. Do you know what the most important word is in that verse? Present. Present. He is our refuge and strength. Those are all great words, and we believe that about God, but do we believe that he's also the God of the present? Do we believe and have enough faith to believe that he is not just our refuge and strength when he chooses to, But he's our refuge and strength and our ever-present, say it with me, help in times of trouble. Is there anybody here who feels like you're in trouble? Have you ever been in a situation in life where you feel like you've been in trouble? Do we realize that maybe if you haven't been, or maybe you are, there may come a time where I would probably say within a good, you know, percentage, you will at some point be in trouble? Church, he is not only our refuge and strength, but he's also present. Present. Walks with us in the midst of it. They were basically saying, so the Israelites are basically saying that they realized that they needed to cry out to the Lord. Verse 11, and they said to Moses, why did you bring us here to die in the wilderness? Weren't there enough graves for us in Egypt? What have you done to us? Why did you make us leave Egypt? Didn't we tell you that this would happen while we were still in Egypt? We said, leave us alone. Let us be slaves to the Egyptians. It's better to be slaves in Egypt than corpses in the wilderness. I can almost hear them at the end of this going, oy vey, right? There's a list of complaints here. But look at the contrast. If you go back into verse 8 of the same chapter, it says, so he, meaning Pharaoh, chased after the people of Israel who had left with their fists raised in defiance. What happened? They left, and Egypt was hot on their heels right there. They could have killed them at the gate. And they left, and they left in defiance. In fact, this is a great Hebrew term here, which means rumyad. And it literally means in boldness. They left with boldness, their fists raised. Some of your translations say like an army, they left Egypt. But again, you've been there. I've been there. Think about the feelings that you have, the moments after God has a great victory in your life. Think about the feeling that you have after that. You feel empowered. You feel like, wow, look at what God just did. But how long does it last? An hour? A day? Maybe a week? I kind of equate it like this. You go to the mall during the Christmas season, and you're driving and you're circling around the parking lot, you're circling around the parking lot, you're circling around the parking lot, and all of a sudden you come around the one bend and there's a spot right in the front row, right by the door you need to go into. There's like a light shining down. And so you pull in, and what's the one thing that we say? Oh God, you love me. You have provided me with this incredible space. Thank you, Jesus. And then all of a sudden we go in, we do our shopping, and we've got 15 minutes to get to a place that takes 20. And we come back out, and we get into the spot, and all of a sudden we hit all that holiday traffic. And then what do? God, why do you hate me so? But he's the same God that just provided you this incredible parking space. But it switches that fast, doesn't it? We leave out of the slavery of our sin and defiance, saying, look at what God has done. We leave like a vast army in boldness with our fists raised in the air and saying, God has rescued me today. And then all of a sudden we get hit with the enemy and we go, ah! Church, is this not our story? Is this not how we act? Let's look at how irrational Israel is acting. If we go back and look at Exodus 14, verses 11 and 12, here's the crazy thing that God revealed to me as I was reading. What does it say in verse 11? And they said, who did they say it to? To Moses. Think about their complaint here. Their complaint is directly to Moses. Moses, why did you bring us out here to die? What have you done, Moses? Why, Moses, did you make us leave? Didn't we tell you, Moses, it's better to be a slave in Egypt than a corpse in the wilderness? Moses, why are you doing this? Now, let me just tell you, to bring back a term that I think we're going to end up hearing multiple times through this series, that is some serious stinking thinking. That is some serious stinking thinking. And you know why? It's because stinking thinking creeps in when you place more emphasis on people rather than God. That's where stinking thinking starts to creep in, because they're putting all their emphasis and all their chips in Moses. And of course they're terrified. Of course. What's Moses gonna do? He's just a dude with a staff. Now, granted, he's going to do some really cool things with the staff, but at this point, they're putting all their emphasis on Moses, and they've taken their eyes off of God. I want to say this again, because it's so important you hear me say this. People are great, but they can't sustain you like God can. I mean, basically, what they're saying is it's better to go back to my old life, because I really don't think that this chump can lead us. That's really what they were saying. It's better to go back and be a slave, because I don't think this guy can lead us. Because again, their focus was on the guy, not on the God. That's good. That's bonus. That's Holy Spirit right there. I'm not that good, folks. You know that, right? But they put their focus on the guy instead of the God. So, I love Moses' response. Now, we know a lot about Moses because we get to look at the story and then look back at it, right? So we know a little bit about Moses. I love his response, because Moses at this point could have said, "Hey, I'm really sorry, guys. I don't know what I was thinking. All I'm doing is what God told me to do." And that would be very easy for Moses to take on that type of behavior, but he doesn't. I love, Moses is great here. His response is perfect. It's in verse 13. "But Moses told the people, 'Don't be afraid. Just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today.'" He could have said, "Listen, don't be afraid. Watch what I can do." And we know Moses, he actually does do that a couple of times in their story. But here, he gets it right. He doesn't put the emphasis on himself. He puts the emphasis on God. And he says, "Stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today." You see, they were focused more on Moses and what he couldn't do rather than on God and what he was doing right in front of them. I imagine that the people were freaking out. I imagine that in my mind, I can see the city of Chicago literally backed up to Lake Michigan. And they've got the wilderness of Wisconsin to the north. That's a joke. Yeah, sorry. Okay. So I can see that they start hearing these hoofbeats out in the distance. And they can hear this. It sounds like an army is approaching. And if I look off in the horizon, I can see dust billowing up. And then all of a sudden they realize, "Oh man, Pharaoh's coming. Whoa, Pharaoh's coming. What do we do?" So 2 million people start banging into each other, and they start screaming and they start crying out. And in that moment, Moses is saying, "Stop. Stop. Don't run. Stop running. Watch what my God can do." Because the reality for us this morning is this: you need to stand still long enough for God to do what God said he would. You need to stand still long enough to be able to allow God the time to do what he said he would. He didn't give them false pretenses. He told them over and over and over again, both directly and through Moses, "I will be there. I will care for you. I will fight for you." And Moses is finally at this point where, in the beginning of the story, where he's saying, "Guys, stop running. Stop freaking out. Yeah, I know they're coming." And I'm sure that there were parts of Moses going, "All right, God, you're going to come through, right? Because I'm trying to lead these people." I feel like we have the same thing happening in our situations in life. That we start freaking out, and we start running, and we start putting our own plans together, and we start crying out to God, "Why did you lead me down this path?" And I think the reality for us is that sometimes we need to stand still, because I think this is what Jesus says to us: "Stand still and watch me rescue you today." Now listen. I want to confess. You may not like the way he rescues you, but at least you're not dead. Can I say that? Is that fair to say? You might not like the way that he rescues you, but at least you're not dead. It's like this, a person who is in the ocean that's drowning. They don't care how the lifeguard rescues them, even if it means them getting bumps and bruises along the way. They might wake up the next morning and go, man, my arm is really sore. You know, and I've got these bruises on my arm where that lifeguard yanked me out of the water, right? And the reality for us is they're not going to complain about the bruises or the scrapes because at least they're alive to experience them. You might not like the way God rescues you, but at least you're alive. And he knows what's best for you. We've already covered that. That was last week. He knows what's best for us. Exodus verse 13, the second half of 13, I'm going to come to a close here. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. Now, that's actually a funny part of the story because God already knows what's about to happen. We're not there yet. If you're like, you're reading this fresh, you're like, I wonder what's going to happen, right? But we know that God's prophesying. He's like, hey, listen, let me tell you, the Egyptians you see today, they're not going to be there, okay? Just let me just tell you that, right? So we keep moving here. The Lord himself will fight for you. Just stay calm. That's the hardest part, isn't it? Just staying calm. Isn't that the hardest part? I'll be honest with you. I didn't come into huge, like, close interactions with bears in Alaska, but I think if a bear was coming charging at me, it would take a lot for me to go, stay, bear. I'm making myself big here. Why haven't you stopped yet? Right? I know it would be hard because it's the same thing that we experience in our life. That just because we're talking about a physical bear doesn't mean we're talking about the spiritual bears in your life. What are the spiritual bears? What are the things that are running at you and they're charging after you? And God is saying, just stand still, stay calm. I've got you. I've got you. And it's hard. It's hard because I have to talk about this side of it because you know I've been up to this point talking about the time when God says it's time to go, it's time to go. But there's also the other side of that as well. When God says to stay put, yeah, we don't like that one. We don't like that one. It's true. The Lord himself will fight for you. Here's the amazing thing. Let's jump forward. Let's jump forward to Christ and Jesus. This is true for Israel and it's true for us because it's through Christ and it's through his death and resurrection that we have seen God fight for us. God fought for you when he sent his son Jesus. He fought for you and guess what? It cost him his life. But he wasn't fighting for himself. He was fighting for you and he was fighting for me. He put himself in front of the spiritual bears in our life. And as much as he gives us power and authority to say, stay, he also stands in front and he says, no, you don't. No, you don't. That is my child. And I've got them. And they are where they are because they're listening to me. And he fights for you. And he fights for me. I just had this analogy pop into my head, so I'm trusting it's the Holy Spirit, so I'm going to go for it. If you've ever seen the movie The Bear, this little bear cub, small bear cub gets lost, and his mother dies, and he's on his own, and he gets kind of adopted by another larger bear. I believe it might have even been a male. It was a really kind of a strange thing because it wasn't supposed to be. This relationship wasn't supposed to happen, and yet this older bear kind of looks out for this little bear cub, and all of a sudden, there's this mountain lion that's coming after this little tiny bear cub. And the bear cub does what he's watched his mentor do, and he stands up on his little tiny legs, and he just kind of starts, you know, he's at this little cub, right? And all of a sudden, you see this mountain lion, like, lunch. And so he starts coming after this little bear cub, and you can see him. He's got this like look of intensity. He's coming after him, and all of a sudden you see the mountain lion stop, and like almost look in fear. And then all of a sudden the mountain lion turns and runs away, and the bear cub comes down off of its, you know, being making himself bigger. And you pan back, and you see that mentor, that bear, the father, standing behind him. I mean, just 8 foot tall, fangs and roaring. That's what I see here. That's what I see. We stand like a little cub and, you know, up against those things. And the best part is we have a father who is behind us. Pan back. And the enemy runs because our father is standing over us going, no, I don't think so. Not today. Because he is our ever-present help in time of trouble. It doesn't say he's our ever-past help in time of trouble. It doesn't say he's our ever-future help in time of trouble. I believe all those things are true. But if we look at the reality of the statement before us, if we look at the reality of the verse that says he's our ever-present help in time, present help. Sometimes we just need to stand long enough. We need to stand long enough for God to do what he said he would. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. You need to stand long enough. Today, I believe that there's some that you need to stand long enough for God to do what he said he would do. At the first sign of an enemy attack, you need to cry out to God. He's the only one who can get you out. You can't cry out to people. That's good. I'm not negating that, but the people around you can't take the priority of God in your life. Because the people around you can help. And I believe that we can help, but the reality is we have to put our emphasis on God. He's the only one who can truly, truly get you out. I want you to hear this morning, church, that he will fight for you. You need only to be still. Now, I think there's a bigger piece of this for us as we close this morning. I don't think it's just a you. I think it's a we. I think when we look at this as a church, we need to recognize how often God fights for us as a church. And I think that we need to stand still long enough for God to do what he said he would. Church, this isn't a time to run. This isn't a time to go somewhere else. This is a time to stand together. You know the amazing thing about the Alaskan wilderness and animals and just the dynamic of bears? If you're with a group of people and a bear is less than 100 yards away, they actually tell you that you should be 300 yards away from wildlife. Well, listen, if you can find a spot in Alaska that's 300 yards away from any wildlife, you know, good luck. But when you're talking about a bear specifically, if you're traveling with a group of people, guess what? They tell you that that group of people should get as close as they can. Because when you're together, you actually make yourself bigger. And you protect yourself better when you're in with a group. And so, you know, this is kind of just bonus material here because God's just working in me what I'm working out with you. I think there's something to be said there about why life groups are so important. Because there's some battles you can face on your own, but there's many that you can't. There are some battles that are maybe just meant for you and God, and I believe that, but there's also many battles that you can't. You can't do this alone. You got to have a group of people, a network of people that are going to come with you, and you're going to crowd yourselves together, and you're both going to put your hands in the air, and your hiking poles, and you're going to make yourself big, and you're going to go, stay, because you're protecting one another. Folks, I hope you're listening. I hope you're listening. Because listen, there's a you in this, and there's a we in this. I think for some of us, we need to stand still long enough to allow God to do what he said he would. And I also think as a church, we need to stand still long enough for God to do what he said he would. Do you believe that this morning? Let's stand together as we close.